Hello there. I'm here to show you a wonderful place. A veritable Camelot of the nuclear age. Not made by God Almighty, but the working man.
You can be a hero by purchasing a residence and a Vault-Tec vault today. Because if the worst should happen tomorrow, the world is going to need you to build a better day after.
Hey everybody, Eric Schweitzer here for The Gamer. Today we're talking about Amazon's Fallout, and I'm joined by the Vault Girl herself, Rhiannon Bevan.
Howdy, howdy.
I thought that this show was so much better than I thought it was going to be.
It was so much better than the trailers. It was better than I think everyone was anticipating. It was just very good.
Yeah. Where to begin? Let's start with the cast, because I think the cast was pretty much perfect. Walton Goggins is our main sort of in the past and the future. The show has two timelines and plays the same character, but in two very different ways. And I've always really liked him. I really liked him in Vice Principals and all that HBO stuff. And I thought he just like killed it in this one.
No, he absolutely does. I mean, he kills it in like everything he's in, so I wasn't too surprised with that. But the casting, like you said, was just perfect. He was the perfect sort of all-American guy in the past, and he was the perfect ghoul as well. So he had a lot to carry, and he absolutely carried it flawlessly, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I was writing something about his character, about the way like throughout the sort of pre-apocalypse timeline, his journey of deprogramming. His sort of slow realization that like the world is pretty wrong. It shouldn't be this way. I thought was handled so well. Cause he starts out as an actor. He's a veteran and he has a really cushy life and he thinks that things are pretty good. And all of the problems around him don't really affect him because he's in a class above it. But then slowly starts to become pretty disillusioned until let's not go straight into end of the season spoilers right at the start here, but he has a really cool transformation that you know mirrors his physical transformation when he becomes a ghoul in the post-apocalypse.
Yeah, that's the perfect summary of it. And again, without getting into spoilers, I think his pre-apocalypse story is probably my favorite of the show. And it's also very unexpected. I will also say very unexpected for an Amazon, or at least a show that is on an Amazon-owned platform. Again, without getting into spoiler territory, it understands, and this is the most important thing about the show, consistently, it understands the intent of the games, the themes of the games.
Yes.
Even if it's not, and I think that's extreme because it's not adapting a story that we've ever seen before. Especially like pre-apocalypse, we don't get any pre-apocalypse stories in Fallout. So yes. To do that and then to carry it so effortlessly with an amazing cast and a really nice sort of deprogramming story from, 1940s-esque America. Mm-hmm. Is one of its strengths, and I feel like that consistently is one of its strengths in how it brings something new to the table with everything it does.
Yeah, you're totally right. It nails the visual aesthetic of Fallout. Like it has all the iconography that you would expect, but it also hits on all of its themes too. And it hits on them harder than the game does because TV has to be for every audience nothing can be ambiguous in TV these days, right? Everything has to be as on the nose as possible. And I think that the show is very on the nose with what it's about. But because it's a satire, it works. Let's talk about Ella Purnell's Lucy, who is your quintessential fish out of water, a very naive vault dweller, but plays it in a way that like has a lot of nuance and isn't just like a one note sort of I'm lost, confused girl thing. Right. Like I thought her character was great.
She was my favorite character in the entire show from the very first episode to the final episode. And that is because On the one hand, she reminds me of like the characters I make where they like going for a charisma build but not pulling it off well at all. Like, she's failing every single speech check. You can see it in real time. It's fantastic. Her lines are hilarious. Her Elipanel's delivery is hilarious throughout. She carried it for me. Like, at first she is like very much an archetype, especially in the first episode. There's a lot of like jokes about her naivety and some jokes I wasn't expecting in the first episode. People will see, I think, what I mean with that. But she definitely comes into her own towards the end and is a more fully realized, fleshed out character at that point, and one that I'm really looking forward to sort of carrying the series going forward, because we now know there's already probably going to be a season two. So I'm really looking forward to that as well.
It's not easy, and it's credit to the writing too, because, like, you know, Fallout has silent protagonists for the most part. I know 4 was a little bit different, but the characters in Fallout are great, but it's all the people that surround you, and you're just like this blank slate player insert. So to create someone to be the vault dweller and try to figure out who that person is and who a vault dweller should be, I just thought it was like it was so well handled. She's so much more like dynamic than you would expect the player character to be.
Yeah, that was my biggest fear going into it. Looking at the trailer, I think the worst thing she could have been, and the worst thing the show could have been on the whole, was boring. And you definitely can't accuse her of being boring. I think it was a very good decision to make her not kind of like she failed upwards a lot. Not even failed upwards. Sometimes she's just failing downwards. And I think that was really fun to see. She's not as competent as some players would be as well, which I felt was really good, because a part of the experience of Fallout is everyone failing in this absolutely horrific world. But yeah, I'm really glad they took the direction of not making her a blank slate for people to project themselves onto, because the show, I mean, if there is someone for that, maybe it's the ghoul pre-apocalypse, maybe not completely, but but the show doesn't really need that, because this is a weird and wonderful world, and there shouldn't be any sort of, the grounding is in when we slowly realize the parallels it has of our real world. Like, that is the moments where it kind of hits home. We don't need a sort of straight man to carry the show, like, at all. We don't need someone to just be a blank slate, and we don't have that. And I'm glad we don't.
Yeah. And then the third prong of our lead cast is Maximus. Aaron Moten, who was really interesting character, because he's the one that really gets revealed throughout the season. At first I was not connecting with this character at all. He just seemed like kind of a coward. He didn't speak much at all. He just kind of let things happen to him. But then once he gets some agency a few episodes in, he's actually the most hilarious character in the season.
Oh, by far, especially towards the end. I was actually physically laughing out loud at some of the stuff he said. Him and Lucy as well, they're amazing paired up together.
Yeah, there's a really funny, the two of them together are really funny, because they're naive in opposite ways. And so it's like, Lucy doesn't understand the world and he understands it too much. Like, he takes this crazy world for granted. And so you see this, like, the way that they come at Fallout from two different directions is really funny.
Yeah, completely agreed. But I was torn on him at first as well. And I was like, oh, okay, he's kind of like the weakest link here. Like, from the first episode, I was not enjoying his scenes the most. I was kind of wanting to get back to the vault stuff. But as you said, he reveals himself as the show goes on, especially when he gets that agency, then you really start to see his character show. But I really like it. It's a real inversion of what we've seen from the Brotherhood of Steel in the Bethesda games. He's so eager to be this like heroic knight that we saw, especially in Fallout 3. But he really only cares, and the Brotherhood as a whole really only really care about the aesthetics of it. They don't care about like the actual doing of it part. And that, I found that really compelling, and I was relieved that they took that route with it. I think that's going to be kind of controversial with fans, but I think to me that's the best the Brotherhood is, when they are incredibly flawed and not just there to be like the wasteland cops. Although they are the wasteland cops, but like for bad reasons. I don't mean that's
right. Yeah, you're totally right. It does. It nails exactly what's interesting about the Brotherhood. And that's that their aesthetic is one of incredible power. But then when you figure out who these people really are, it's all a veneer. And Maximus almost has like a Finn arc too, because he's like, all he's ever known. I mean, he was a child of disaster, which we can get into, but then he's brought up by the Brotherhood and all he's ever known is like wanting to be this like perfect soldier. And then like immediately getting ripped away from that and having to decide what his own path is going to be. Yeah, he has a really cool arc.
He does. And it really ties into the other twos really nicely. I think a big theme of everyone's arc here is kind of like cult deprogramming. And all three of them have had stuff hidden from them in different ways, or at least like in the case of the ghoul slash Howard Cooper, I believe his name is Cooper, like a Tim Cooper. Yeah. In the case of Howard Cooper's case, that happens pre-war, you know, by the time of the war happening, like he's gone through it as well. He's grizzled at this point. Right. But Lucy and Maximus are going through that throughout the show. And I think it's such an interesting thing to focus on, because it really isn't afraid. It doesn't pull its punches with its criticism of American culture. And it does that through different ways, three different ways, in fact, through each character.
Yeah.
And I really hope fans pick up on that, because I feel like a lot of them are going to get caught up on sort of smaller details, go like, oh, this armor doesn't look quite right, or no, this isn't how this looks, you know. But I feel like that's less important when, through Maximus' arc especially, like we're getting a deconstruction and a real understanding of what Fallout is meant to be about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and then the dynamic between Lucy and the ghoul is interesting too, because they have this tug of war of hope and hopelessness, right? The ghoul is trying to turn Lucy, and Lucy's trying to turn the ghoul back. And so they're like, and by the end of the season, it really feels like the ghoul has pulled Lucy in. Because after everything she goes through in this show, it's pretty hard to see any light at the end of the tunnel, right? It's pretty much, we're on the dark side now, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just even a case of like, oh, vault life wasn't all it was cracked up to be. It's like literally everything she's ever known has been thrown away and stomped on and then given back to her and then thrown away again. It's absolutely brutal, both physically in terms of what she goes through, but like emotionally, mentally, it's a lot. I wasn't expecting it to go as hard as it did, but it did. So that's a big, you're right, very interesting tug of war, and probably one that's going to continue.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about the story, because, you know, it's at its core, it's a MacGuffin story about a bunch of people chasing after an object of power. And I think there's some complexity in that we have two timelines, but it is a pretty simple story of like it's a road movie. And it's a bunch of people going after the same thing. But it seems to me that that was kind of a perfect way to make this first season all about the world. And that by putting people on this like long journey across the wasteland, we really get to showcase all the different pieces of Fallout.
No, you're absolutely right. It covers a wide area, both in terms of like the lore it's diving into, but also like location wise, we're going around everywhere. And that is because, yeah, a lot of it is, especially the first half of the season, is setting up the world of Fallout for the benefit of people that haven't played the games. I can definitely see people that haven't played the games being able to perfectly enjoy this fine. It doesn't introduce you to the entirety of the lore, but it tells you the bits that you would need to understand. Even as someone who already knew it, it's fun seeing it, you know, realized in live action. So I agree. I think it is a MacGuffin story, and especially as for the first half. I do feel like there's sort of, when it gets to the halfway point and you realize this is about things outside of that as well, it's great. I love the detour. It doesn't feel as natural as the first half, I'd say. So I like what they do. I don't necessarily like how they get there. I feel like it could have benefited from a few more episodes, quite frankly. I mean, I wasn't ready to put it down, so maybe I just wanted more, but I do feel like it wanted more breathing room to set things up before we started getting the character arcs really moving. I remember getting to episode 7 and thinking, how are they going to wrap this up so quickly?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess if I do have a couple points of criticism, one is actually the two things you just mentioned. I think it's Vault 8.
Yeah.
I want to say there is a 2-episode, but it kind of bleeds into 3-episode that is all takes place within a vault that Lucy and Maximus stumble upon. And what's cool about that is that is a tie into the games, right? Like a big part of the games is stumbling into a vault and then slowly uncovering what kind of weird crap was going on there. And the show does that, but it's also like it's 8 episodes and more than 2 of them are just what's going on in this vault. And that story does connect to Maximus's arc in an important way. And it's also important for Lucy's deprogramming arc, but it is a big percent of the show dedicated to that. And then the other thing that you mentioned is just that this is a bit of a puzzle box show in that it sets up some big questions in the first episode and then really teases those out for the whole season. And then in the last episode, it's just like, here's everything. There's like big, long exposition dumps in that last episode where like really crazy stuff happens.
Yeah. That's kind of, again, the final episode, I'm not going to spoil anything of what happens, but big stuff happens. Big implications for the world at large. Big implications for the games going forward. And it just happens very quickly. Very, very quickly when we're already rushing to the clock to finish up people's character arcs. So again, it's not a case I have, even though these are changes that were probably quite controversial, I have got no problem with them. At first I was like, ooh. But then, you know, I thought about it. I was like, makes sense. But I do feel like it could have been told in a stronger way. It needed that breathing room. You know, we really needed to appreciate the gravity of what's being told to us, because then also the gravity of like the conclusion to what happens with the MacGuffin. Like that's big as well. And really like emotional. And it's kind of muddied in these exposition dumps, like you said. It's the pieces are all there, and maybe it will benefit when we get the whole next season to really explore everything that we've just seen. But it's a lot to shove in at once, and I feel like a lot of that is because we had that multi-season arc in the vault. I remember when we got to like the midway point of the multi-season arc, I was thinking this feels like a Monster of the Week show at this point, you know. I feel like I'm watching like a series with like 20 episodes a season where they just go into a different vault every week and see what shenanigans are going on there, because it really, the action really is just brought to a stop for that. And I have no complaints about that, because I really like those episodes, but it is just, it was a bit much for how much they then had to fit in at the end. So that would be my complaint there. And I feel like it doesn't use what it does to the best of its abilities, if that makes sense.
Yeah. It does feel like 8 episodes was not enough for everything they wanted to do in this first season. And I know we don't want to like spoil the end here, because the show just came out. So I have to talk around it a little bit, but the show, it makes a major departure from the games in the end, a very major one. And on the one hand, I have mixed feelings about that. On the one hand, it does feel like the TV adaptations, like the movie versions of games, are like a little too fixated on going bigger. I don't know if bigger is the right word, but like making things more important. It just feels like there was some implicit thing about this is the show version, so we have to like, things have to be more important. But then on the other hand, I do appreciate the show really telling its own story and sort of planting its own flag in the Fallout mythos. And I think it does some really cool things with that. Like, for example, there's, for the most part, nothing in the show is from the games in terms of, like, characters and story. And, like, yeah, we have Blamco mac and cheese, right? Like, we have Nuka-Colas. Like, all the iconography is there. We've got Mr. Handy, all that stuff. But we don't go to... like Liberty Prime doesn't show up. Like, we don't go, you know,
spoiler, no Liberty Prime.
Yeah. Like, Nick Valentine doesn't have a cameo. Like, they don't do any of that stuff, except that Shady Sands, except that Shady Sands is like a key part of the story, except that in the game, Shady Sands is like a capital city. And on the show, it's a crater where a city used to be. And it really feels like they're saying, this is our Fallout, you know? Like, when you take an important location like that and blow it up, it feels like you're making a statement.
Yeah, I've got feelings about that, because that immediately made me feel like... because, I mean, Shady Sands is an area that is somewhat mentioned in New Vegas. It's a location in Fallout 1 and 2. And to just blow it up when it's mentioned in New Vegas is not being blown up. It makes me kind of like, you know, I was like feeling it. Yeah, you know, that's when my fangirl instincts were starting to kick right. in. I like the meaning behind it all. I love that it does with it as a story. So that kind of makes me forget any hang-ups about like the dates and maybe, but like it, I'm like, again, can't get into spoilers. The show very much respects the classic Fallouts and especially New Vegas, because that seems to be what it's drawing upon the most when it comes to its themes, when it comes to even like references and stuff. It really seems to love those games. So to then do something where like why is Dawn in New Vegas mentioning that like this huge location is just a crater now, you know?
Right. Well, that's so deliberate, because they needed a city that was a crater, and they could have named it anything. But the fact that they named it Shady Sands, I think, is like a real statement of like, yes, you know the games and we love the games too, but this is our own story.
But this is going to fit into the game mythos now. Like, this is part of the lore. It just seems like, okay, it's now part of the lore that this place is blown up, and I guess no one in New Vegas felt like mentioning that, you know.
Well, is this supposed to be canonical with the games?
Yeah.
No, oh, really?
Yeah, that's kind of what made me like, oh, wow, you know?
Oh, I did not know that.
So, because immediately when we find out about Shady Sands, I was looking at the timeline. And I was like, this is a bit weird, you know?
Yeah. Oh, that changes a lot of what I think of this show, actually. I didn't realize that they were treating it as canon.
Yes, Todd Howard said, we view what's happening in the show as canon.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I have to think about some things again, because I didn't realize that, because it makes some big things happen here. And if that's supposed to be canon with the games, that gives me a lot of
Wow. Yeah, that's okay. Exactly how I felt. Like, when I realized that getting towards the final episode, I was like, okay, well, you've just kind of overwritten a lot, but whatever. I'm here for the ride. I like what they're doing.
Yeah.
I'll let them cook.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about how it like brings elements from the games in. So like, for instance, like we have the wildlife stuff, and there isn't a lot of it. There's rad roaches show up quite a few times. And they're as disgusting as you would think they would be. And then we get the bear, the Yagwai. Is that right? Yaoguais, which was very cool, but they hold a lot back. And one of the big like wildlife moments is a totally new type of monster. It's like an axolotl, like a mutated axolotl kind of.
I think like, do they call them gulpers? They look nothing like the gulpers in the game.
They don't look like gulpers. Yeah.
No.
Gulpers are more like frogs.
Yeah.
They're smoother. I thought they looked different. I know that people have said they might be gulpers, and maybe they are. but they look way different.
They look completely different, and I'm kind of glad for it because they looked horrific in the show.
Yeah. I thought, so that's like an underwater creature that they're fighting, and I thought for sure that was going to be some kind of Mirelurk.
Yeah.
Some kind of crustaceous thing, which we don't see. And there's a lot of, there's a lot of monsters that we do not see in this show, and it feels like there's a lot of stuff they're holding back. There is a tease for Deathclaws, but we don't see any. There's no super mutants. There's no synths. I thought that was...
Yes, there are no synths. Oh, that's just
there's
hit me.
No synths, yeah. So there's like really big core component. I mean, super mutants are like... They've been in every Fallout game. That's a...
Yeah.
That's a very important part of the lore, and they don't show up. There's one guy in the pre-apocalypse timeline that makes a joke about super mutants. But that's it. So it feels like... Like when I was watching the show, every episode was so packed with Fallout iconography. Like every scene, it felt like they were trying to jam in, you know, like the junket gun. Is that what it's called? That like fires teeth. Like they got that in there. They got Mr. Handy in there. Like everything is so perfect. But then when I sat back and thought about it, there's so much left to cover in Fallout lore.
I almost respect them holding off and stuff like Deathclaws, especially because like that's the one everyone expects. And if they haven't used it, then I trust they had their reasons for that. Maybe those reasons are just budgetary, like because I know they did a lot of practical effects in this, and maybe the Gulper that isn't a Gulper took up a lot of that of their time and resources. Because
yeah,
I can imagine it did.
Yeah. Okay, I think like. I want to take the last few minutes here and dig into that last episode just because there's so much to talk about. So this will be our like spoiler part now, right? Okay.
Oh, thank God. I can't wait to say. I can't wait to get this off my chest.
Okay. So let's sort of go in order of like the big hits, right? So I think like... Maybe the first thing is the reveal that Vault-Tec dropped the bombs. And the way that's revealed is in the most arch, cartoonishly evil, like a bunch of billionaires sitting around a conference table talking about how much money they can make by ending the world in the most uncertain the least uncertain terms of all time, like literally saying like there sure is a lot of profit to be made in ending the world, like almost looking at the camera and winking about how evil they are. And you know what, it kind of works. Like I rewatched it a couple times for stuff I was writing, and eventually I started rolling my eyes at like we're gonna create a perfect monopoly like that. It is so evil. It is so insanely evil.
And it already was even before the reveal. They're like, because it also reveals how the different Vault-Tec experiments came about, which has been a question for a while because we're not sure why Vault-Tec just decided, oh, in this vault, let's put like one person and 100 puppets. That's in this world, let's have everyone called Gary. You know, like it kind of reveals why. And how these came about. And it's just these billionaires spitballing like different experiments they could do. And then one of the characters, I believe Mr. House from New Vegas, says like, oh, well, this is a lot of money to put on something that, you know, might not happen. And then it's like you said, it's a really cartoony Vault-Tec representative is like, we're just going to do it.
Right.
And I immediately hated that. But then I rewatched it and then I was like, maybe I don't hate this. Maybe this is just like the logical conclusion for like the series and the lore and where this has all been leading to. Maybe that's just how it was always.
It definitely has been leading there, at least on the show. Like when you look at every interaction that Cooper has is people telling him the end of the world is coming and people are going to make a bunch of money off of it. You know, like he meets with Matt Berry, who's like a fellow actor, and he's like, Hollywood's dead, my boy. Everything is product now. I'm product, you're product, the end of the world is product. You know, like everything is very on the nose. And then he meets with a fellow actor who's like in this extremist resistance group who's trying to tell him about the fiduciary responsibility and how Vault-Tec has to make the end of the world happen. So like it's not even that big of a reveal, because all these people through the whole show are saying, I think Vault-Tec's trying to end the world. And then the big twist at the end is Vault-Tec ended the world. But yeah, but it's played as a reveal, and it is a very evil scene.
I think,
yeah,
why I'm split on it is because I thought one of the things I always loved about the Fallout lore is you never find out who dropped the bombs, and that kind of felt like the point, because by the time you get to the point 200 years in the future when everything's in the radiated wasteland, it doesn't matter who dropped the bombs. All that matters is that someone did and another side retaliated. Doesn't matter who did them first. They both egged on each other with a nuclear arms race that destroyed humanity, you know, at that point. And that kind of initially I feel like you're really taking away that beautiful story, that morbidly beautiful story about like the logical conclusion of a nuclear arms race. However, I don't think it completely takes it away, because I mean the US is still complicit in this, because throughout the show we find out they were just giving power and resources to Vault-Tec. You know, Vault-Tec only had could only exist because of the nuclear panic that the US and in universe China created.
Yeah.
They feed off that hysteria. They feed off that need for like a want for security, and this like longing to preserve America, because that's the only country that deserves to be preserved, you know, in their minds. So it doesn't take away culpability from the nuclear states in the world, but it does put a lot more on Vault-Tec, because it turns out they literally, it isn't like even metaphorically they dropped the bombs because they were getting in the way of peace talks, or they were getting in the way of a more sustainable source of energy that didn't rely on nuclear power. No, they literally just did it. you know? I'm not sure how I feel about that for the grander, you know, plot, but of the games, of the universe. But I'm willing to let them cook, you know? I trust this show to do something with it.
Yeah, I would feel a lot less mixed about it. I felt a lot less mixed about it before I learned that this is all canon to the games. Now I'm not sure about that choice. But so then the next big reveal is that all of those Vault-Tec people are still alive. In a sort of Horizon Zero Dawn twist, the schemers that ended the world have also managed to live into the apocalypse, which is where like the sort of plausibility of all this, you have to just sort of accept that they are so evil that they would rather live in an apocalypse and I don't know, like have this singular monopoly, even though there's nothing to, you know, they all live in mansions and throw parties around their private pools, but they would rather like live in a ghoul infested apocalypse. Like that's better. I don't know. But yeah, so they, not only have they all cryoed themselves and they've lived into this dark future, but Kyle MacLachlan's character, the overseer of Lucy's vault, was one of them. But when we meet him, he was like a personal assistant of the ghoul's wife, who has sort of turned out to be the architect of this whole thing. And so this whole, through the whole season, you think Lucy's going to save her dad who's been kidnapped, but it turns out that the person who kidnapped him was also alive in the before times, right? Somehow.
Yes.
Go ahead.
I was watching this with my partner and we were trying to figure out like, did they explain how she was alive still? I mean, I'm guessing she just cryoed herself somehow. Maybe the resistance cell had their own cryo technology. I mean, she's a scientist, and so maybe. Like I said, there's not enough time to explore the implications of everything they show on screen in that episode.
Right. Yeah. I don't know if I needed all of the people we meet in the before times to come back later on. Like, I at first I thought it was weird that even the ghoul is still around. Like, I know ghouls can live for a really long time, but this is hundreds of years later, right?
Yeah.
But I was like, okay, star power, Walton Goggins, they'll make it work. But then we find out like all of the people in the before time storyline are going to show up now in the apocalypse. And I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's a bit overkill. I'm fine with some of them because, I mean, Vault-Tec is evil. Of course, they found ways to live forever, even if living forever means not even living at that point. But then the implication that the ghoul is going to find his, like, wife and kid as well is just kind of perhaps a bit overkill, because I feel like the whole point is that he doesn't have that life anymore. You know, he's lived like 200 years without it, you know. So it just feels weird to just sort of bring him back to the beginning there. But we'll see.
Yeah. And then the MacGuffin that they have been chasing this whole season, it turns out to be cold fusion power, which is interesting in that if this is a canon storyline, that now this cold fusion, this little tiny thing that fits in the back of your neck, exists in the world and can power the entire wasteland with infinite power. Like, power and who has control over it is a big theme, especially in 3, but it's a big theme in all of them. And it's not it's not a simple or renewable or infinite thing, but now it kind of is. Like, this exists now.
Yeah, that's going to have huge implications, because, I mean, I think the way it's presented at the end, like, you know, they get it to work, but then the people who would benefit from it can't benefit from it anymore, tells me that it's not going to go in a very positive direction. It's now under control from the Brotherhood of Steel, who have shown themselves to be just laughably either incompetent or just evil, you know, in how they throw their weight around the wasteland. So it's not in trusted hands right now. I'll be interested to see how that goes. But like you said, if it's infinite, then how is the Brotherhood gonna hoard it to themselves? But I'm sure that will probably be a big thing going forward.
Yeah, but it does feel inevitable that it will get destroyed. It feels like that's something that needs to get taken off the table before the show ends, because it's just too powerful.
No, I agree. Or either it's somewhat limited in its scope, maybe, is the only way they can dance around that.
Yeah. But yeah. And then finally, we end with a reveal of New Vegas, which is very exciting. I was pumping my fist. I was high-fiving a million angels. That's the ultimate fan service, I think, is like showing the strip at the end there. How cool is that?
It was so fan servicey, but I was so here for it. Like, I was like, I try and like not be a complete fangirl, but it was physically impossible for me to not like get up and cheer and like scream as soon as I saw that. I couldn't believe my eyes, and I'm so happy that. And that's, of course, like, that goes back to what I was saying earlier about how the show clearly has so much respect for New Vegas. Otherwise, why would they do that? Why would they end on that? Why would they be taking us there in the future storylines? So I'm so excited to see what happens. It's so silly how we see it, though. It's so silly. With Kyle MacLachlan's character there. But I'm so ready for it. I can't wait.
So do you know where in the timeline this lands? Is this before the game or after the game?
After, I believe. After.
Okay.
Is going to be pretty big, because obviously anything could have happened there since we played the game there.
Right. Yeah. So if this is after the game, then they don't have to deal with Benny and Mr. House. And, but like the way that game ends is up to you. Right. So like Caesar could still be around. Right.
So I think how it ends is, I think no matter what ending you go with, stuff isn't, I think a big theme of that game is nothing is really built to last in the wasteland as much as people want it to. Like, you know, obviously all the factions are people trying to restore an image of the past that they like, but none of them really take, none of them are taking root. So I think I can see an argument for just none of the sides winning in the show. Yeah. And that just, that still being compliant with whatever ending people went for. Obviously it would be a bit weird if like the Legion took over the wasteland for, I don't know, 3 years and then no one brings it up like a decade later, but you know, it would be interesting to dance around that, especially when we've already seen Mr. House in the show, and then to not have him be brought up again, because obviously he can, his story can end in different ways in the game.
Yeah, so tell me about that. Which character is supposed to be Mr. House? Because that totally went over my head.
He was credited as that in the credits, so it definitely was meant to be him. He was the Robco representative in the scene where they're discussing what to do with the vaults.
Okay.
Doesn't sound cool. Or look anything like Mr. House, so that's where. Because sadly, Mr. House's voice actor, name escapes me right now, is he passed away. Very okay. Iconic voice. But yeah, they can't get him. So they opted to get someone who doesn't look or sound anything like him, which is a decision. But I kind of was like, could it? Because he made a reference to casinos, and I was like, that's probably meant to be him, right? And then in the credits, he's credited as either Mr. House or Robert House. I forget which one.
Interesting. Well, we know, I think it's pretty clear that we're not done with the flashbacks, because where the season ends, we have Cooper just for the first time learning the truth about who his wife is and what Vol-Tec is doing. But when the season starts, they are separated. He's not an actor anymore. He's doing birthday parties with his daughter. So we have to close that gap in season two, I think. Which also leaves room for more Mr. House stuff in the past, maybe. And more revelations about how the bomb did get dropped. Maybe they're going to go back on that. Like that, because that scene was Vol-Tec saying, we'll drop the bomb ourselves. And in the future, people seem to believe that, or at least Moldover seems to believe that that is indeed what happened. But maybe it doesn't play out that way in season two if we get more flashbacks.
Yeah, because if they do go back on that, that would be interesting. But the way they reveal that information really makes it seem like, no, this is a permanent change we're making to the law. This is, I think I said to you after we were talking about this, after the we both finished the show, that this plot twist was initially planned for the movie that they were going to make based on Fallout in I think the script was written in 98. So this is the original Fallout team, so you know, people can't even say like, oh, it's revisionism. It's like, no, this seems to be what the original creators of Fallout were gunning for. I believe the film was only cancelled because the studio went under, not because of like any creative differences, so I might be completely wrong on that. But it definitely seems like to reveal it so dramatically and like almost staring at, maybe literally staring directly at the camera, I can't remember the scene. So I think that's going to stay. And I think some fans won't like that very much.
I think you're probably right. I think that will stick just because it was such a big moment. Yeah. When they were spitballing their vaults, did any of those sound familiar? The one about the vacuum robot that they're going to put in charge, that sounded like a real vault, right? Isn't there a vault where they have a robot that's is the overseer?
Yes, I believe so. Although, again, I'd have to brush up on my vault knowledge and also watch.
I'd have to look them up,
because they were saying a lot, and I feel like I heard a few where it sounds like vaguely familiar. Like I think in one of them they were talking about like particular populations to be put in, and I was like, oh, that sounds like one from whatever game. But I'm sure people will notice, like actual ones noticed.
They're insane. They're like, one of them's like, we're going to take illegal immigrants and turn them into super mutants. And one of them, and one of them's like, we're going to separate the kids from their parents so that only the strong children survive. They're just like, I think they're more evil than the ones in the games, which is saying a lot.
They'll intentionally overpopulate one, so everyone has to like fight for resources. Like, yeah, just absolutely mask off. Just not even trying to like pretend like what benefit this could have for anyone. It's like, that's be evil,
right?
For a laugh, you know,
because in the games it feels like it's science, like it, yeah, like it feels like the experiment. Now some of it is social science for sure. Like, what is the Dave thing trying to prove? You know, like, but on the show, a lot of what they're doing is literally for fun. Like, literally, somebody goes, "This sounds like a lot of fun."
Because initially they set it up as like, oh, this can be, you know, we'll leave it up to this company to put what they think their ideal version of humanity being rebuilt, yeah, would be. And it's like, half of them, like, how? Like, at that point, you're just, right, enjoying human suffering. Like, this isn't like, yeah, your ideal society.
Exactly. How is the torture Olympics going to build a better society? Yeah. I don't know. It's fun. That whole thing was just fun, I guess. I'll be thinking deeply about it for a long time, trying to put those pieces together. But maybe if it was all for a goof, I think that's okay too. Is there anything else we should touch on? There's a lot of stuff we didn't talk about because like there's just so much packed into the show.
There is, but I think I'm just so curious to see what everyone thinks about this. Like, we could put this video out and everyone's like, yeah, it's garbage, and we're gonna like go after the writers now. But like, I really just implore fans to give it a chance and just go along for the ride, and like let them cook, because I really just feel like they understand the messaging, they understand the themes that they're working with, even if facts change, even if like dates are moved around and maybe stuff doesn't look how you expected it to look. I feel like it's so much more important that they understand the spirit of what was intended with the games. And I would say, yeah, they absolutely do.
Yeah, I think they absolutely do too. I think it really does capture the essence of what Fallout is in a way that, like, you know, I know people were really harsh on the Resident Evil series. And I think like its big pitfall was how much it just did not feel like Resident Evil. But this does. And it's not just the aesthetic. Like it really does capture what Fallout's all about, even if it's going out on a limb on some pretty big ideas. So, yeah, I liked it a lot. I'm way more excited for season two now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So am I. Out of interest, what would you give it? Five out of five. Or not 5 out of 5.
Give it a 5 out of 5? Out of 5? I think I want to say 4.5. I think I thought it was pretty brilliant, except for a few things that were super cringe and made me want to die. There are some jokes in this thing. I'll point out a couple. The first episode, when the massacre is happening, the tone of the show is not that well established in the first episode. But there's a moment where everyone is getting very brutally massacred and somebody is rolling out a jello mold for the wedding ceremony that was supposed to be happening. And somebody goes, "Get that jello out of here." And that was like a big joke in that moment that does not land at all. It is so bad. It's so bad. In the same episode, there's a moment where a character is razzing Lucy's brother is giving her a hard time because she's in an arranged marriage and she's about to meet her husband to be. And he says, "You have no idea who this guy is. He could have a big butt. He could have a small butt. You don't know," which is another joke that does not land at all. There's a lot of that through the show where you're just like, why did they write? That was the most first like rough draft bit. You just had like put joke here in the script and then never filled it in. There's some pretty rough stuff, but that's really the only thing I have to complain about.
No, I'm pretty much the same. I think I was a little bit more forgiving on like some of the bad jokes in episode one because I was just kind of in awe of like everything around me. I didn't remember the butt joke. I must have just been distracted by looking at how cool the vault looked. But I do remember the jello one, and the jello one was bad. But I mean, everything else about that scene was great. I mean, that's the moment I fell in love with Lucy as a character, when I'm watching her, yeah, beat up a guy in like a 1950s wedding dress. I'm like, this is my Fallout character. Yes,
yeah,
I feel
she's badass.
I think for me it would be either a 4.5 or a 4, brought down mostly by not what they did in the final few episodes, but the execution of the final few episodes, but still beyond surprised, pleasantly surprised by it, very happy. And I think it more than earns its place in the world of Fallout. I'm very happy for it to take a role there, even if it's kind of stomping on some stuff that came before it.
Right. Yeah. Okay, cool. Right on. Well, that was super fun. Thank you very much. Our review is linked down in the description if you want to read more of our Fallout thoughts. That's it for this video. Thank you so much for watching. Don't forget to like, subscribe, hit that bell, and visit us at thegamer.com. That's thegamer, no space.